For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way towards salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. Or in the words of Paul, at present we see indistinctly, as in a mirror, but then face to face. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave.
Welcome to the Catholic Cave. I'm Timothy O'Donnell, and in the cave with me today, it's kind of a plus and a minus. The plus is our good friend Dr. Redpath, Peter Redpath, the rector of the Adler Aquinas Institute, is with us back in the cave. The minus part, though, is my trusty friend and companion, brother in Christ, Mark Tuttle, is on vacation. So if you're a regular listener to the Catholic Cave, you'll know that a couple of weekends ago, I was not in the cave. I was up north at Grand Rapids at the Acton Institute, which was a great time, called Acton University. Lots of friends of the show were on there, too. So, and the big man, Al Cresta himself, was broadcasting from there. But with no further ado, let me welcome Dr. Peter Redpath back into the Catholic Cave. Welcome, Doctor.
Oh, great to be here, Timothy. I'm glad that you were up with Father Sirico. He's an old friend of mine. Not that he's old, but he's a friend of mine from Brooklyn.
Oh, no kidding. I didn't realize that. Actually, while we were up there that Friday, he had a birthday. I think he turned 66, if Facebook can be trusted with those sorts of details.
But, yeah, relatives of his used to own this terrific pizzeria in the Italian neighborhood that I lived in Brooklyn, Sirico's.
Oh, fantastic. You know, I know in one of his recent books, Father Sirico, I think it was called Free Markets and maybe Moral Philosophy, something like that. Not a big thick book like the kind you like to write there, Dr. Redpath. But this one though, he always, and I've heard him mention this before, he makes a lot of reference to that neighborhood you grew up in, and how there was a moral order to
it
all.
Oh my God, it was unbelievable.
Tell us a little bit about it. And then we're going to have to jump into the Congress that's coming up.
St. Bernadette's, over there was the parish, and anything they organized, it was unbelievable. They were just organizational geniuses. In fact, it's one of the reasons that I got interested in organizations.
Oh, no kidding!
Yeah, my father was heavily involved locally and as an actual community organizer, and but both in that parish and in a couple of other parishes, St. Ephraim's, where I went to school. Most of my sports activities I did over at St. Bernadette's with Father Sirico, in his neighborhood.
He's fantastic. He became a, he doesn't know this, but he's done this for so many people. He became an intellectual mentor for me. I mean, right. I stumbled across him watching EWTN, and he was, I think he was on Raymond Arroyo's show, doing like, the nightly news, kind of weekly kind of Catholic news wrap-up show that Raymond does. And I'm like, this priest is fantastic. This guy really knows his stuff. And then he mentioned things like, he's part of this Acton Institute. So I started digging in, and actually it was 7 years ago I went to my first Acton University, which is this, as you know, but just for our listeners' sake, it's basically about 3.5 days of different lectures from great scholars from around the world. I want to say there was upwards of 2,500 participants this time, and just up there in Grand Rapids, which it's a beautiful time of year to be in that city. Mm-hmm. But just seeing so many people come together to talk about all the things that we would be told are politically incorrect or delicate to talk about, namely economics, religion, law, I mean, all of that swirling together. And so I've really appreciated all the work that's been done there by the Acton Institute. And boy, just bless them for all that good stuff that they're doing. And I found the book, too. The book I was thinking of was called Defending the Free Market. And Father Sirico in there talks about how just the culture itself was just imbued with Catholic morals and ethics and ways of behaving. And that as kids growing up, if you're playing stickball or something like that, boy, if you get out of line, your parents may or may not be around, but someone, a responsible adult was always around to keep you in line, to keep you from mischief. And, you know, especially boys growing up, we're prone to be mischief makers. I know I sure was. And he talked about the mayor of the block, this older, I think Italian woman, but perhaps Jewish, but she would sit on her front porch, I guess, and she would make sure the boys didn't get out of line, you know, and kept good order. And just he talks about what a blessing that is. And that was a sort of analogy into we want a free society. But if we want freedom, you have to have a virtuous, you have to have a certain kind of people that can be entrusted with the responsibility that comes with authentic freedom.
Mm-hmm. So true.
So let me dive in here, because with the topic at hand, because the reason why we wanted to catch you is because literally right around the corner from this program airing is going to be the 4th annual Aquinas Leadership International World Congress. And I know the theme this year is Augustine, Aquinas, and the Apologetics of the New Reformation, or Reformations. Now, this is going to be Thursday, the 13th of July, through Sunday, the 16th. And it's going to be on Long Island in Huntington at the Seminary of the Immaculate Conception. But tell me a little bit first, if you would, Dr. Redpath. This is the 4th Annual Aquinas Leadership International World Congress. What is this Congress about? It's the fourth one, so there's something important going on here. But then maybe let's talk a little bit more specifically about the theme for this year.
Well, all of the congresses are related to the chief project of the Western Civilization Foundation, which is the major organization behind the Adler Aquinas Institute and a whole bunch of other organizations I've been involved in, and renewing Western culture, maintaining Western culture, and passing on the Western tradition to future generations. It's what Rod Dreher is looking for in his Benedict option. Basically, we've been involved in doing this for over 20 years, and the idea about renewing the West by renewing common sense, which to me means is something very specific. It has to do with actual faculties of the human soul, a particular faculty that St. Thomas identified, which he called particular reason or cogitative reason, analogous to instinct in animals, that has been little understood yet. A few Thomists are, I would say maybe 1% of them are aware of St. Thomas's teaching about this, yet it's crucial to understand not only his teaching, but to have a proper understanding of human nature as a foundation for maintaining Christian identity. Increasingly, Christian identity is being fragmented. Not only Christian identity, all sorts of identities for decades have been going on in the West. And to try to preserve the identity of the culture, the identity of the civilization, and to achieve a lot of the goals that Pope Benedict, John Paul II, St. John Paul, and Pope Francis want to with respect to new evangelization, is not possible. In other words, these new reformations that they're seeking to achieve is not possible. It's not going to get anywhere unless you have a proper understanding of human nature. And for centuries, in educational institutions, the Catholic Church has not had an adequate understanding of human nature to build a Catholic or a Christian culture that can survive all of the different attacks that come against the Church. It wasn't until the 13th century that St. Thomas actually came up with an adequate understanding of the human person that would provide a secure foundation for an understanding of how philosophy and science are related to wisdom, and how the whole of the whole of a culture which has to be built up around the pursuit of wisdom, Christian wisdom, for example, can be achieved and secured.
Is that what's missing? Or what is missing in our current understanding of the human person? What do you think's lacking?
The faculty psychology of the ancients is missing. The notion that what we are chiefly educating when we are educating an individual is faculties of the human soul, and the relationship of the soul to the soul to the body. This conference we're talking about on Augustine Aquinas and the apologetics of the New Reformation is chiefly about two things. One, St. Augustine's understanding of the human person was inadequate.
In what way?
And it was used as the foundation for the understanding of the development of Christian wisdom. He never understood properly how to unite the soul to the body.
Oh, okay. Is that kind of like the charge of Neoplatonism that's leveled against him? Is that why?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. And he has this residual kind of Manichaeism.
Yeah. Okay. I can understand that.
He's incoherent. I mean, on the one hand, he says things which indicate that he recognizes the connection between the human intellect and the human senses. But to Plato, to a certain extent, he distrusts the senses, and he thinks that knowing is chiefly an act of the intellect, inasmuch as it doesn't tend to be influenced by disturbances coming from the senses, and turns inward and upward, returns to a will that is being illumined by God and so forth. So he never adequately understands how to straddle both the abstract kind of syllogistic reasoning that you get in deductive science and the practical kind of knowing which is related to ethics, a productive behavior, for example, so that it's the same intellect that is engaged in these two distinctive kinds of activity and modes of knowing, one which is abstract and syllogistic, and the other is concrete and command and control, a command and control type of reasoning, unless you can come up with an adequate way of explaining how one intellect can be engaged in both of those activities and how each in some respect can be scientific and generate wisdom and prudence, you can't explain the nature of the human soul.
Because
the human soul, as St. Thomas talks about it, is not an incarnate spirit. It's specified, he says, by the animal part of the soul. It's an animal reasoning. We're not the dumbest of angels. We're the smartest of animals.
Right.
Specific difference is precisely lies in a peculiar way of animal knowing. That makes human beings occupy a specific a place in the order of creation, where we are inclined to be in command and control. God has ordered human beings have a special role in the material order that inclines when it's organized and ordered by a prudential reason and metaphysical wisdom, inclines the whole of the physical universe to operate in an orderly way. It improves all sorts of social relations, including political relations. But if you can't properly relate, explain how one human being can both abstractly know and concretely know, and both of them in a way are scientific, you can never explain Christian wisdom. You can't explain how philosophy related to science and how science is related to wisdom.
Do you think that's very insightful? Do you think part of the reason maybe Augustine doesn't get it all quite right is because I had heard he didn't have access to Aristotle, and we know St. Thomas Aquinas did. Do you think that that's one of the key factors that make it different, accounts for the difference?
He had some access to Aristotle's logical works, but he didn't understand the nature of philosophy. He was a prize-winning poet and rhetorician. And by the time he came around, the ancient Greeks had started to lose their understanding of philosophy. This is very important to recognize. Augustine tends to conflate philosophy with the liberal arts, chiefly with the trivium, that is mastered for the pursuit of understanding how to read scripture, a scriptural text. And he's chiefly interested in the study of the philosophers of Plato for apologetic reasons, in the sense of apologetics being a defense kind of mechanism to protect you against the arguments that are being brought against the faith, and so that you can understand how to engage in dialectical reasoning and protect yourself against these attacks. Now, to me, that's a very narrow understanding of apologetics, and it doesn't do enough to protect your ability to defend yourself, because the best defense is an offense.
I've heard that said. Right.
Christians for centuries have been on this defense, almost like a siege mentality, where they've taken for granted that science was somehow discovered in the 17th century. They bought into this propaganda, and they identify science with mathematical physics. And because of the wonders that technology has produced, they tend to think that the fact that people can engage in technological manipulation of phenomena makes them scientific. Now, I maintain that's false. The most popular understanding of what science is today tends to be that it's this empirical verification of hypotheses. And I claim that's a very narrow understanding, the most perfect kind of knowledge that human beings can have.
Would you lay that at the foot of, say, Descartes?
Descartes, to some extent, not empirical testing. That's more under the influence of Bacon and Sir Francis Bacon and David Hume to some extent, Sir Isaac Newton,
it's like that constriction, right? They're constricting the definition further and further across the centuries, right? Into that, like you said, like torturing nature to reveal its secrets, I think is what,
right?
Right. That's Bacon, and that's also a Redpath quote I use.
people who maintain that they understand, and this is true of political liberals, political conservatives, they all buy into this mistake. Thomists do it repeatedly, among others, that this is what science is, mathematical physics on the one hand, but so empirical verification is basically gives you the truth, but this makes no sense. If that were true, mathematics, considered simply as mathematics, would not be a science.
Right, because it's abstract, right.
They don't verify empirically. They verify in their imagination.
Right, right.
Through the mathematical models and the definitions. And it's only because of the use of mathematics to the behavior of physical things that are being observed empirically that they come up with their arguments. this empirical testing is simply an argument within within a hypothetical syllogism, that's supposed to they say, you see this shows over here. Well, truth is not something that is observed by the external senses. Truth is intellectual. It's your mind, your intellect, your soul that apprehends the truth of things, and it does so on the in relationship to physical behavior, in relationship to other faculties. Like Etienne Gilson once said, we intellectualize with our senses and we sense with our intellect. Human beings have this peculiar ability to have an intellectual principle that is present within the sense faculties. We sense with our intellects, and it's the intellectualization of the senses in which science begins. And the modern notion of science can't defend that claim that, you know, empirically testing hypotheses is what science is. That's not something you can empirically test. Huh?
Well, no, it would seem though modern science or scientism, those in that camp, let's say, might fall back on like consequentialism or a kind of pragmatism. We Americans, I think, are very susceptible to pragmatic arguments.
Productive knowledge only aims at making tools. Okay?
Sure, yeah.
And tools only exist for the purpose of improving human faculties. If you have no faculties to be improved, what science does is improve human faculties. It improves the human person.
I feel like my iPhone does that to a certain extent.
Right. You know, in other words, a tool is only a tool for a person who knows how to use it.
Right, yeah.
In some way to benefit human activity. And human activity is related to one psychosomatic unit, a hylomorphic being, as St. Thomas would say, a soul-body composite that is improving human faculties. A pair of skis are an instrument for skiers. They're totally worthless. It's dangerous for people who don't know how to ski.
Like myself.
So the chief aim of science can never be production. Science, strictly speaking, can never be a productive activity. And if you point to the fact that, hey, I'm very productive over here because I make these tools, well, it's only to the extent that you're improving human faculties. So that you have science. Huh?
Well, yeah.
If you maintain that there's no real end or aim in the activity that you're performing, like many people who claim to be scientists do, you're not a scientist.
Well,
the whole psychology, in other words, science exists within the psyche of the scientist.
We need to take a break, and we'll be back with more of The Catholic Cave right after this. Paul Kengor, author of A Pope and a President, John Paul II, Ronald Reagan, and the Untold Story of the 20th Century, is coming to Our Lady of Mount Carmel on Tuesday, August 1st at 7 p.m. Hear the story of how a Catholic Pope and a Protestant President were brought together to bring down Soviet communism, and learn the role that Our Lady of Fatima played in these world-changing events. You may have heard Professor Kengor on Catholic Radio Indy's The Catholic Cave. If you missed it, the podcast is available at catholicradioindy.org. That's author and professor Paul Kengor appearing at Our Lady of Mount Carmel, 14598 Oak Ridge Road in Carmel, Tuesday, August 1st at 7 p.m.
Catholic Radio Indy. There's lives being touched every single day by it.
Welcome to the Catholic Cave. I'm Timothy O'Donnell, and this conference that's coming up, which I'll mention again, which is the fourth annual Aquinas Leadership International World Congress, and that's going to be Thursday afternoon on July 13th, so just around the corner, through Sunday morning, the July 16th. It's going to be at the Seminary of the Immaculate Conception, Huntington, Long Island. I'm going to be there. Dr. Redpath, who we're speaking with, he's going to be there too, and a lot of other great scholars. So, and as you're talking about this, the current setting that we're in, and this constricted understanding of both philosophy and science and how it's used, would you say, I want to relate this back to leadership itself, because this Congress is aiming at leadership with the specific theme of Augustine, Aquinas, and the apologetics of the New Reformation. or reformations. Right. Would you say that this it's an observation I have, and I'm wondering what your take on it is. It seems to me in the current setting, a lot of leadership is considered effective if one is to able to quantify or count lots of data. And that if you're able to produce more data, whatever you're measuring, whether it's the product, whatever the production measurement is, right? You're producing more widgets or what have you. The more a leader can get others to produce those sorts of things, the more we would say that leader is effective as a leader. Which to me then drop what's completely missing are things like all the goods that can't be measured through mathematics.
Yes. Yeah, that's one of the problems, one of the chief problems, because leadership is related to science. Okay, so whatever your understanding of science is, the more scientific you are, strictly speaking, the more of a leader you are. To the extent that you have you possess a knowledge of something just by means of experience, doesn't make you as much of a leader as to the extent, you know, that you have an artistic understanding of it, you can apply rules and so forth that you've memorized and so on, and to the extent that you understand how those rules were derived and so on and why they work and so forth, well then you've got a scientific understanding and you're more of a leader in the sense that you understand how the parts and how the wholes are connected and how you can cause them to be harmonized. Now, this, what you're pointing out here is crucial to understand because for centuries, Western intellectuals, Christian thinkers, Thomists, for example, have identified philosophy with a kind of systematic logic, and they have not understood precisely what the ancient Greeks understood by philosophy, especially Plato, Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle. And Aristotle brought this more or less to completion. Huh? For the ancient Greeks, the chief interest in philosophy was to study organizational wholes and their behavior, to understand the nature of the of organizations and how they generate their actions. Huh? So ancient philosophy was chiefly concerned with understanding actions of organizations. They looked at the physical universe as this massive organizational whole. Within it were contained a whole bunch of other organizations, and the causes for all of these organizations existed within the physical universe. Now, as secondary causes. With the Protestant Reformation, there became this attempt to take out secondary causes from the universe, what Plato calls forms, Aristotle calls forms and things, which are intrinsic principles of organizational behavior. Okay? So the principles of organization were supposedly, all of them are caused by God, and the only principles of organization for the physical universe were supposed to be known by mathematicians. This is a total fraud. This claim was made by poets during the Renaissance that only they were able to read the book of nature. Only they knew how, you know, because of a special inspiration, how things could be unified and organized. And so what they were doing is they were taking this faculty that St. Thomas calls the agent intellect, the abstracting intellect, which enables people to identify the causes and principles of organizations, and they maintained that this faculty only existed in the mind of this select elect group of people. It's a fraud. It goes back. It was done in antiquity. It was passed on for centuries, but people who are ignorant of Western intellectual history don't realize this. Mathematicians have done this for several centuries. They've claimed that they're the only ones that understand what they now call laws, instead of principles in things. And Reformation thinkers went along with them, because this meant that only this narrow sphere of empirical awareness, experience, could constitute science. And the faith then was defended because everything else outside of this was opinion, but enlightened opinion. In fact, even this narrow understanding was considered to be a kind of enlightened opinion.
So why would they go down this? What's the motivation for them? I agree with that assessment. What's the motivation though for them to have gone down that path?
They didn't understand the nature of philosophy.
And then made them sort of vulnerable to...
There were these debates that had been going on during the Middle Ages that, in relationship to Islamic thinkers who were trying to narrow the power of God, okay? In the 13th and 14th century, even 12th, 13th century especially. So to protect the power of God, they thought they would diminish the power of the human intellect, that this would somehow protect it. St. Thomas realized that's not the way to do it. That if you maintain that there are no causes or principles of organizations that exist within these organizations, that these are like categories in your mind, like Immanuel Kant thinks.
I was going to say that. It sounds like Kant.
Right? Yeah, or that they are historical dialectic. They're part of a historical dialectic of consciousness. And
is that Hegel?
Or Marx, you know.
Yeah.
Then
Marx.
What you're saying is the principles of organization and organizational activity cannot be understood by human beings, other than, say, by mathematicians. And you, then you get this mathematical narrow understanding, But you take anybody who's involved in a business, then you can't understand principles of induction and what they involve, okay? Because principles of induction involve you being able to see a one in a many, to see the cause that's giving the harmony to this or that organization. Huh?
Right. Oh yeah. Well.
So different organizational wholes that are being studied by different habits of the soul, psychological habits, require different principles of induction. And so what you're doing is you're narrowing down and you're maintaining that only one method of induction exists. This is the stupid mistake that Sir Francis Bacon made, for example. And he limited that to productive knowledge. It's only by torturing the physical universe in some way that you get at the principles of induction. That's nonsense. A person who's really sharp, who understands the way an organization operates, walks on the scene, say, of a factory or of a business, and say, "Hey, this place is a mess." Or they say, "Oh, this operates beautifully, huh? Why? Because the principles of organization. If you can't understand the principles of organization, how are you going to become a leader?" What we've done is we've systematically taken out of higher education an understanding for students of the principles of organization, of different subjects of study, and we've wound up producing anarchists.
Well, let me use that as a segue into. I know you did because you shared it with me. You gave a talk June 8th. At the Catholic University in Lublin, Poland, and it was titled "Preserving the Identity of a Catholic University in an Increasingly Fragmented World." Talk to us a little bit. We've talked about you shared with us some what's been lost, but what is sort of this state of affairs? What was the thrust of this of your talk?
Well, what we're chiefly trying to do within Catholic universities, and we've been doing this in the United States since the beginning of the 20th century, is to educate students to get jobs, to become employed. Right?
Oh, yeah, reducing education to employment, yeah.
Well,
employable skills.
You know, so students will ask me at times, so why should I go into philosophy? How am I going to get a job? And I'll tell them, look, the chief aim of becoming scientific is not to become employed, but to become an employer. Right? To train people how to be cultural and civilizational leaders. The Jesuits used to understand this, that you go out and you convert the one percenters.
That might have been a while ago.
It was. Then they got involved in their German idealism and
swept away in that direction.
You know. And they kind of lost their minds as a result, and everybody that they influenced in their educational institutions followed along with them. So early on, the chief end of education for the church was the Christian wisdom, and metaphysics on the one hand, and prudence, metaphysics and ethics, the chief aim of education. Those became the chief aim of education. When the universities start in the 13th century with 1200 with the University of Bologna, for example, the teachers are organized into faculties. They're using an Aristotelian model. You have different faculties. You've got different powers and abilities of the human soul, which require that you have different ways of imagining, for example, that is distinctive to one kind of faculty of the soul by means of which you're able to achieve the kind of abstraction or induction. By means of which you can recognize, you can develop a quality of the soul, a psychological quality, a psychological disposition. By means of which you can recognize the principles of harmonization within this or that kind of organization, so that you can influence its operation, so as to be able to secure this or that end. Achieve this or that activity. The only way that you can unify a multitude, as Etienne Gilson once said, is to order it. And the only way you can order it is to the extent that you can take a multitude and unequally relate the members of that multitude to harmonizing their activity to realize one chief act. Like a multitude of people on a construction site doing different jobs to build this house, right? Or a number of people that are working for a fire department doing different operations because they have different talents.
Right.
And the organization exists within the talents of those members who are unifying into one relation, one dominating relation toward one act. Get rid of the end, you get rid of the relation. So those people who maintain that there are no real acts, no real ends in things, they cannot possibly be scientists. They're denying the reality of organizational activity. Not only that, but to engage in scientific activity, you have to have confidence in your personal abilities. You know, you have to know what the doable deed is, what you can accomplish, what you can't accomplish. Many people today say that science begins in skepticism. That's nonsense. Science begins with knowledge. But a recognition that your knowledge is inadequate, is not as perfect as it can be. And you have a desire, to improve your knowledge, because you recognize that ignorance is dangerous. That's why Etienne Gilson said that the first principle of classical philosophy of the ancient Greeks is sense wonder. People who can't wonder, who don't have the psychological disposition to recognize that being ignorant is dangerous, who are satisfied being stupid, or who are absolute skeptics, can never be philosophers, can never be scientists. So becoming a scientist requires a moral culture. It requires a culture or civilization to reach a certain stage where they recognize that it's prudent to cooperate, to harmonize activity, to engage in teamwork, to get out of intellectual backwardness. This is true enlightenment. And simplistic understanding of science that we've been fed and that we feed our students in our elementary schools and secondary schools and universities is killing the culture. It's killing the West. It's killing global civilization.
Which is acting completely against what the purpose of education is anyway, the whole project we're engaged in.
St. Thomas says you have to have a student has to have docilitas, teachability.
Right.
and if you have no interest in learning, if you have no interest in if you don't think something is doable by you in the first place, you can't choose to pursue it. There is a psychological disposition necessary to become a philosopher or scientist. And this requires cultural support. If in your activity, you totally ignore the cultural and moral foundations of your profession, you think they don't matter whatever, how can you possibly claim to be an artist or a scientist? If you're a professional athlete and you do everything that you possibly can to destroy... to destroy professional sports. Are you a professional athlete?
Right. No, I see how that one would undercut one's own position there. But I don't think the artist. I don't think the artist that are maybe up to that, or you and I might identify an artist or a prominent figure that's up to that, probably don't see themselves exactly in that role. They see themselves rather as maybe pioneering. You know, think of like I'll throw one out here. Here's a provocative one: Lady Gaga. Look at Lady Gaga as a kind of, she's incredibly well known. She's received, I'm sure, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars for her aesthetic provocateurs.
The Kardashians.
Yeah, there's plenty of them. But you're right. It's hard for me to say that a Lady Gaga is an artist. In the sense of the word that as we classically understood, right? She's actually undermining the culture that's enriching her.
Yeah, because what you have to do, it's like saying that a thief is really a business person,
A creative business person with a different understanding of private property.
The talent of the person in business is the fact that the person in business. Is able to improve, do something mutually improving, both to the person who's being served and to the business operation. So
yeah, there's a value being added or created, right? Oh yeah,
yeah. And you're preserving the cultural foundation. A business presupposes moral relationships. It presupposes. An ability to cooperate, to work with teammates, for example. So Lady Gaga is like this hotshot on a basketball team who can't give off the ball, who can't pass. Has no sense of teamwork, and has no sense of obligation. There's a moral obligation that lies at the foundation for. The development of art and science, and to not recognize that there are other arts, for example, and sciences and activities that support the existence of your activity is an unprofessional disposition, and people who are artists or scientists should be or supposed to be by nature professionals.
Right. Let me ask you this. I agree with that. Let me ask you this, because I know one of your recent books, maybe your most recent book even, is The Moral Psychology of St. Thomas Aquinas, right? An Introduction to Ragamuffin Ethics. Do you think, I think I know the answer. I'll phrase it differently. To what extent in our current cultural setting are there issues with establishing or transmitting or building up within the young as they go through the educational systems, these proper a proper understanding and cultivating these moral relationships so that we in duties, so that they have a good moral foundation from which they can become professionals or leaders or responsible agents within our communities.
It really is impossible to do unless you have at the foundation of your training, the education that you're given, you're giving youth this faculty psychology. It was precisely around this faculty psychology that the ancient Greeks developed their understanding of the cardinal moral virtues of temperance and courage, justice and prudence, related to different parts of the soul, different psychological parts. And the education and practical activity, as St. Thomas says, doesn't occur syllogistically, and Aristotle says the same thing. It occurs by training students to in right desire and right reason, or right pleasure, more precisely, to experience the right kind of pleasure, the right quality and intensity of pleasure in doing healthy acts that are life promoting. And health securing, and habitually to execute those acts, so that the habit within the soul becomes a universal command and control principle, and moral education cannot possibly exist and be perfected unless you have the unique understanding of the human soul as possessed of faculties. This is why Catholic education, in relationship to ethics on the university level, is an absolute mess, and why the best that Catholic colleges and universities can come up with is courses on casuistry, where they'll just argue about problems. Ethical problems and so forth, or they'll get involved in this analytic Thomism, John Finnis engages in, and just talk about abstract relations in terms of natural law, which is not St. Thomas's moral teaching. St. Thomas's moral teaching is much more complicated than that. Natural law relates to having this principle of induction, of right reason, but it has to be applied in the individual circumstance to make the individual right choice, the healthy choice, by training in right desire. And you get that from the cardinal moral virtues of courage, temperance, courage, and justice. And prudence adds to that right reason. And prudence, according to St. Thomas, is located in on the moral level, is located in the animal part of the soul, in cogitative reason or particular reason. And so the prudent person, the prudent man, is the chief measure of moral rightness.
We'll be back with more of the Catholic Cave right after this.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio with 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor. Tell them about Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome to the Catholic Cave. I'm Timothy O'Donnell. And we only have a few minutes left here, Dr. Redpath. I want to ask you one kind of one practical question. And then I want us to, and then we're going to go back to and revisit the some of the particulars around the upcoming International Congress. But what do you make of the trajectory of school systems to engage in STEM curricula or STEM, just STEM schools, standalone STEM schools, where it's right, it's the science, it's the math, it's the technology, really to the exclusion of any other course offerings.
Well, they're a mess. I mean, it's totally wrong.
But why is that? It seems like that's being touted. This and engineering in there too, right? This is being touted though as the sort of the expressway to lucrative career fields because of the advanced technology that you're.
The chief aim is creating serfs to promote the global AI culture, where you've got these centralized bureaucrats and plutocrats, who think that they have the system by means of which they.
When you say serfs, are you referring? I got to jump in. When you said serfs, are you referring to like Hayek? Like the road to serfdom? Are you talking about something like that where we're just, because it maybe are, right? Maybe we are being trained to be sophisticated ants in a giant colony, right?
Yeah, now this is, the problem with this is that if you're training students for specialization like that, and you're in a digital age, right, where most of these jobs are going to be replaced by robots.
Eventually, yes.
I mean, the only jobs that are going to really to be ones with a future are the ones that teach students how to use their intellectual capacities, their intellectual faculties, and to do so with street smarts at the same time, to understand. To have a proper self-understanding, not to be manipulators of tools, which artificial intelligence, it absorbs arts. Yeah. So Aristotle once said, the art of sailing governs the art of shipbuilding, which is true, except to the extent that the art of shipbuilding becomes so good that it absorbs the art of sailing.
Right.
And you don't need pilots anymore because these things work on automatic pilot. So for you to chiefly to educate students for technological purposes and not to train them, how to become independent learners, which comes from a sound classical education, from reading the classics, from reading. Not simply St. Thomas, but the Homer and Hesiod.
the whole great books, right? Collection.
The whole great books tradition,
yeah,
right?
Right. Well, let me bring up, because we're out of time. We've been speaking with Dr. Peter Redpath. He's the rector of the Adler Aquinas Institute. You're also the president of the International Etienne Gilson Society, many other organizations, including Holy Apostles, seminary and college. That's another great organization, but extensive background with this topic. It's been a pleasure having you on. We're going to be at the fourth, Dr. Redpath and myself, Timothy O'Donnell, will be at the fourth annual Aquinas Leadership International World Congress. The theme this year is Augustine Aquinas and the Apologetics of the New Reformation, or Reformations. That's going to be Thursday, July 13th through that Sunday, the 16th of July. We're going to be up at the Seminary of the Immaculate Conception at, it's in Huntington, Long Island. We're taking the cave on the road. I'll be doing interviews from this Congress with Dr. Redpath's permission so we can bring back some of this great learning and some of this great work that you're doing back to the lay listeners of our program. So, Dr. Redpath, can't thank you enough for coming back in the cave, and I'll see you in about 2 weeks.
Okay, Timothy. I'm looking forward to it.
Thanks for joining us for this edition of The Catholic Cave. If you have a question or comment regarding this program, please address an email to Kent, K-E-N-T, at catholicradioindy.org or call 317-870-8400. Replays of this program are available on podcast at catholicradioindy.org. Just click on the programming tab, then go to podcasts of local programs.